It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. The United States has the lowest college completion rate in the developed world, and that's not an easy problem to fix. But what if schools knew early which students might drop out? A new report from the New America Foundation says at least 40% of schools try to gauge student performance by comparing past students to current ones. That's called predictive analytics. But how well does it work? Manuela Ikowo is a policy analyst with the nonprofit New America Foundation. Hi, Manuela.
Hello.
And also with us is Tim Rennick. He's Georgia State University's vice provost and vice president for enrollment, management, and student success. And he runs GSU's predictive analytics program. Hi there, Tim.
Hello.
Now, GSU uses a different program, I think, from any other school. Is that accurate?
It's customized specifically for the students at Georgia State. That's correct.
What's different?
Well, the students are different. Georgia State's a unique institution in many ways, lots of low-income first-generation students of color. And so we actually ran data on Georgia State students. We used 2.5 million Georgia State grades, 140,000 student records. And what we try to do is look in the historical data for decisions that students make, actions that they take that make them statistically more likely to drop out or flunk out. We identified over 800 different things.
800 different characteristics that might predict whether a student would drop out or
exactly.
not. And we're going to go into what happens when you find a student like that. But Manuela, these predictive analytics have not always been particularly accurate in the past. What goes wrong when you're comparing past student performances to current students?
So one of the things that could go wrong is thinking about the quality of the data and the quality of the predictive models. And so what happens is, in the case of these early alert systems that are used at Georgia State and across other at other universities across the country, is that they're only able to predict what happened in their historical data. And if the historical data isn't robust enough or hasn't captured all of the things that students might experience that might put them off track towards graduation or interfere in their studies, the predictive models wouldn't necessarily be able to foresee that. And then advisors and other support staff wouldn't be able to provide interventions or supports to help the students navigate those processes.
Tim, how did you avoid these problems that she's describing?
Well, if you actually look at the sorts of things that we're identifying, a lot of them are really just common sense delivered at scale in a way that we couldn't previously. We have 51,000 students at Georgia State, and so there are lots of mistakes that students can make, especially first-generation low-income students, without even realizing it, that we're now able to identify. Things like students signing up for the wrong course. They're a chemistry major, but they sign up for the lab sequence for non-majors. In the past, they would have been allowed to just go on, take the wrong course, and somebody might have noticed it 6 months after they finished the course. Now we're identifying it as soon as they register and getting them in the right class before the first day of courses. Or underperformance in a prerequisite course, a pre-med major who does poorly in a math course or early on in the course in a quiz. Now, instead of waiting till the end of the semester till they roll into a D or F, we're able to reach out to the student and get them tutoring help, supplemental instruction, and so forth while there's still time to make a difference.
So, Manuela, you know, one of the issues that other analysts have talked about is how complex is the each individual's problem, and that a university itself is a very complex system. There are failures that can happen all the way along the way, from registration to the first day of classes. But part of it is a student's background in and of itself. Can predictive analytics actually help when what you're dealing with is a student who may have financial trouble, who may have family issues going on?
Absolutely. So because colleges collect data on students. So, for example, as soon as a student enrolls, you have information about what kind of high school they attended. You have information about their socioeconomic status. You have information about how they have performed in high school, so their high school grades, their GPA, their standardized test scores. And so it's at the very beginning, you have some indication on where the student fares both financially in terms of their socioeconomic status, but also academically in terms of how they have fared previously. And so in that sense, predictive models can help if you can create a model that shows, well, how do students of these particular demographics and with these types of characteristics perform at this institution? You can intervene. You can provide support very early on before they start to experience some of these negative outcomes like dropping out or not attending classes or failing courses.
How expensive is it to do this, Tim? And by that I mean, let's say that a student, their issues are caused by transportation, right? Mm-hmm. Can the university step in? I mean, what do you do and how much does that cost?
Absolutely. Well, what we found is that these kind of interventions more than pay for themselves. They pay in human terms because many more students are graduating. We're graduating 1,700 more students every year than we were when we launched this program a little over 4 years ago. That's a huge payoff for the students and families enrolled at Georgia State. But more than that, it pays for itself financially, because the students who stay enrolled actually continue to pay tuition and fees to the institution. So those 1,700 students who in the past would have dropped out now are being sustained 4 years to the point of graduation, and that helps to pay for the programs themselves. But to answer your point about what kind of resources are necessary, we have introduced all kinds of additional support systems because of the information coming out of these analytics. You can't bring a student in and say you're at risk for X or Y and then not have some kind of solution to offer the student. So one of the things we've done is introduce Panther retention grants. This is a microgrant program. We've given 7,000 of these grants out over the 4 years since we've launched the analytics program. And what these grants do is help students in the kind of situations you're talking about. They may be short a few hundred dollars in being able to cover their tuition and fees or have some other kind of gap. And we're able to very nimbly and quickly give them the money, fill their account up so that they can stay enrolled and progress towards their degree.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about predictive analytics, how a school can determine which students, a university or a college, might struggle and how they might increase graduation rates. If you have thoughts on this, you can tweet us at OST Talk or join on Facebook. My guests are, you just heard Tim Renick of Georgia State University and also Manuela Ikowo of the New America Foundation. Manuela, okay, maybe I've seen too many movies, but as soon as somebody starts talking about predictive analytics, I think of Minority Report and think, wait, what if schools take this a step further and start accepting or not accepting students based on who they think might graduate? What are the dangers of these kind of predictions?
Absolutely. So one of the dangers that we're really particularly concerned about is the potential to label and discriminate against certain students. So students who are typically historically underrepresented at colleges and universities. So low-income students, students of color, students who are first in their families to attend college. And so in our report, what we basically said is that students, college administrators, and faculty should really make sure that these predictive analytics and this data doesn't close off futures for certain students, particularly students who are underrepresented. And they shouldn't also enable profiling of these students as well, who are traditionally at risk. So if these students have demographics or characteristics that are typical of at-risk students, how do we ensure that those who are interacting with students and helping to make sure that they have a seamless transition to the university, that they're not being pigeonholed or added labels are added to them that are negative, that only perpetuate some of these negative experiences that we want to try to ensure that they don't have. And we want to also make sure that these predictive analytics that are used in the enrollment process, so not only to help students once they're on campus, but to figure out which students to even accept, aren't shutting out certain students because of these predictive data.
How do you protect against that at GSU?
Well, absolutely. These sorts of data points are not used as part of the acceptance process. We do not use this in order to determine who's accepted or not. But let's look at the flip side of it. Georgia State this past year, by federal standards data collecting, was the only public university in the U.S. at which the Black, the Latino, the first generation, and the low-income students all graduated at or above the rate of the student body overall. We're also now...
I have to stop for a moment, because that is a ridiculously amazing achievement. That's phenomenal.
And we're now the college or university in the U.S. that graduates the most African Americans with bachelor's degrees. And both of these accomplishments came after launching this large-scale use of predictive analytics. I mean, to give you a sense of the scale, last 12 months we've had 51,000 one-on-one meetings with students to talk about information coming out of this system. And that's what happens. These are interventions that don't force the students' hands, but rather provide information to students that in the past they were lacking. I think that's exactly why we've been able to close these so-called achievement gaps. Because in the past, if you were a first-generation, low-income student, and you'd make a mistake, or you'd have a problem, you were struggling in your math class, and you were a pre-med student, there was nobody waking up and saying, look, you might want to get this help. Now you need some assistance. There's an invisible support system that goes to middle-class students, to multi-generational college students. They have brothers and sisters and parents who are kind of looking over their shoulder saying, oh, you're not doing so well. Maybe you better reach out to help. And what we're doing with these predictive analytics is just that, reaching out at scale. I can't say we solved all 51,000 problems, but I can say 4 years ago, most of these 51,000 problems were going completely undiagnosed, and the students weren't even realizing there was an issue that might need to be addressed.
Manuela, can this be implemented nationwide, or are there obstacles at other schools that are unique?
I think that the popularity is increasing, and so what we found is that less than half of universities across the U.S. are using predictive analytics for any reason. So they're also being used to like predict how many people from alumni are going to donate to the university. So it's still in its relatively new and infant stage, but the popularity is increasing, and because of the successes at Georgia State, many people, other universities are also trying to figure out, well, how can we better support our students as well? And so I don't know if there will be a national model, but what I do expect to see is more institutions trying to figure out how can they create these models either on their own or partnering with other companies that provide these services so that they can see the kind of change that Georgia State has seen, which is really, really impressive.
Tim, I want to put to you this comment from a listener who writes, quote, our failure rate is high, I assume he's talking about in the U.S., but we are letting people into college who would not make the grade overseas. Do you feel that's part of our problem with graduation rates here in the U.S., that we're enrolling people who might not be ready for college?
I actually don't. I mean, I think it's easy to blame public school systems and K-12 and say if only they produced better mathematicians and students with better verbal and communication skills, then we'd have more college success rates. But what we've tried to do at Georgia State is really put the mirror on ourselves and say, what are we doing to trip up students? And what we've found is a lot of students, even those who are underprepared by traditional standards, can succeed in college. They can get through. They can even get through very difficult majors. Every year since we've launched these predictive analytics, we've increased the number of minority students who are graduating in STEM fields. So part of the onus is on ourselves to say, we've created these really complex bureaucracies in American universities. How can we help students navigate these systems that we've created?
Well, let me put that to you, Manuela. Do you have any thoughts on what causes the low graduation rates at colleges and universities in the U.S. compared with our partners overseas?
So I kind of would echo what Tim has already said, that, you know, the college application process is a pretty complex process, so just getting into college is hard. And then once students get there, especially for students who are underrepresented, so they're the first in their families to attend these kinds of universities or attend college at all. And so they're largely flying blindly. And so the systems that we currently have in place haven't been very supportive to help students navigate and be successful once they're there. But I also do think that our K-12 system and our preparation systems to prepare students for college, especially students from certain demographics, so such as students of color and students or attending low resource schools, have more of a challenge to prepare these students to be successful once they attend the university level. So it does. There are issues start at the very beginning, and then there's a lack of support once students are there, which can be bridged.
So we have another question for you, Tim. This is from Michael, who says, this is awesome. What vendor do they use for their analytics?
Absolutely. Well, we have a large team of data specialists in-house. In fact, we've hired them up over the last few years. And we also partner with a large company in Washington, D.C. called the Education Advisory Board that does educational research and data processing.
Manuela, we have a couple minutes left, and one of the biggest issues that we've seen that has risen in recent years is the amount of depression reported by college students. Can predictive analytics actually help colleges or universities deal with mental health issues?
Good question. So in our research, we haven't found colleges using students' health records because that data is quite sensitive to do predictive analytics or to make predictions about what students might be experiencing depression or other mental health issues. But there is a growing popularity of using technology to deliver mental health services to students. So they're using video, they're using on these online tools and apps that college students can use to try to figure out, what's going on, get some additional counseling, especially if the college themselves don't have enough staff to support the need of mental health services. So
we have about
that's on the horizon.
We have about a minute left, Tim. Did you want to address that as well as dealing with mental health issues?
Well, I will say this, that one of the features of the system that we use has an early alert where 2-3 weeks into the semester, professors can identify flag students who have behavioral issues or are just not attending classes. And sometimes those flags result in meetings that create referrals to our mental health counselors and so forth. So it's one stab at beginning to get that outreach there to the students at an earlier time.
Well, it sounds like there may be more steps to go. I've been speaking with Tim Renick. He's Georgia State University's Vice Provost and Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Success, and also from the New America Foundation, Policy Analyst Manuela Ikuo. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.